Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, August the 11th. And as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into today. New York, of course, is at the heart of one of the great controversies of the moment, which is what happened to Mr. Epstein. How did this man commit suicide, I guess, is the question everybody's asking. How did that happen? And I don't know, but maybe Bill has a few ideas. Maybe there's something that he's hearing in the news that he can share with us. But that has to be one of the craziest stories that I have heard in quite some time. I mean, it really makes you wonder just what in the heck, what kind of a prison that is. Ironically, I think that was the same prison where El Chapo was being held. And remember, he escaped twice from Mexican prisons. We're going to be talking a little bit about this week of recriminations that we've had in the country where it just seems like everything is Donald Trump's fault. But I think there's a little backlash movement being created about that. I just think they've gone over the line on so many different points that I think there is a backlash. And then, of course, the gun control debate back in the news, more and more talk about gun control. Exactly what they want to do is not very clear. Exactly how those new laws are going to stop future mass shootings, that's not very clear, but we have to do something, as they say, and I guess some of them just want to do something. They want to do something. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, it is very hot and warm here in North Texas, high 90s. It's going to be like that all of next week, and then they're going to play a doubleheader, Bill, on Wednesday or Thursday, a baseball doubleheader when it's 100 degrees. I guess nobody's going to make the first game, Bill.
Wow, 100 degrees. Now, is that a full outdoor stadium, or do they have a dome?
No, this is the outdoor stadium. The dome is in Houston,
and that's right.
The one here, this is the last year for the open stadium. Next year it will be a dome. So they don't have to worry about it next year, but they have to make up a game with the Angels from an earlier rainout, and they scheduled a doubleheader, one game at 1 and the other game at 7. I mean, I don't know how anybody – I guess if you got tickets, you got tickets, but I don't know how anybody can sit there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in this heat. There's no roof. I mean, you're out there in the middle of with that sun on top of you. I don't know how they do it, Bill.
Well, I don't know. You know, I remember, of course, growing up in an age where there wasn't much air conditioning at all, but also we would watch, you know, the Dodger games, of course, only the Dodger games, on television, and we wondered as kids how they played in that heat. You know, the guy is standing out there in center field, and it's 95 degrees, and they have to be good. They have to be very good at what they are, at what they're doing. So, yeah, I think I never at one time did not like the idea of the domed stadiums, but I've gotten to like it because for everybody, it's simply in terms of climate, a better way of playing.
Well, that's right. And for the fans, really, that's what it comes down to. I mean, the athletes, after all, are being paid and they've got people in the dugout whose job is to keep them hydrated. So they're not going to get dehydrated unless something unusual happens. But it's the fans. I mean, I've been out there in some of those afternoon games, and it's completely, completely unbearable. Well, we have a lot to get into today, but I thought maybe you could give us the latest on Mr. Epstein. That has to be, as I mentioned, Bill, one of the craziest stories that I've ever heard.
It is. And everybody here is absolutely dismayed because no one can understand it. I mean, they've had all these presumed prison experts on television, including, by the way, a number of convicts or ex-convicts who served time. They suddenly become celebrities. because they've served time in that prison. I'm not particularly familiar with that prison. I've never visited. I've never had a dinner there. I don't know anybody who's there. But the general consensus is, but it's only speculation. Nobody knows the facts. The general consensus is that he could not have committed suicide. I would suggest that probably in the end, it probably will come out that he did commit suicide. But, you know, a lot of people in this country in very high places are smiling tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That must be a big burden off their heads to know that this man is gone.
Well, he won't be talking, as they say.
That's right.
And that I'm sure will make a big difference. There's only two possible, in my mind, you know, there's only two possible explanations. One is a natural death, meaning a heart attack, that he
yes.
just had a heart attack, or, I mean, that's the only possible, and that can happen. I mean, that could happen.
Yes, especially to someone under strain.
That's it. I mean, he was under tremendous stress, and I'm sure was pushing his body and his physical limits to the maximum. So, yeah, there could be a stroke or a heart attack. I can buy that. The other possibility, this gets into more of the criminal conspiracy or the conspiracy, is that maybe somebody put a pill, you know, inside the meatloaf, as they say.
Well, Well, apparently he was not on suicide watch. They had taken him off suicide watch, but there were certain specifications that had to be met. He was not to be alone, that there was supposed to be a cellmate, that they were supposed to check on him every half hour. Obviously not given anything that would allow him to commit suicide. Apparently none of those standards were met. They really mm-hmm. just, they fell down on the job. Either they fell down on the job or they were they were told to fall down on the job.
Right.
You know, there was an expert today who spent time in his legal career investigating things that happened wrongly in prison, and he said the first thing they'll look at is the possibility of corruption, the possibility that people were just told to stay away from him. And I don't know. Of course, there's a lot of irresponsible speculation
about
the Clinton, you know, but it's said more as it's morbid, but it's said more as a joke than anything else, and
mm-hmm.
that is that Hillary did it or that Bill Clinton did it, and they were seen later that day going to a funeral, ironically, with a big smiles on their faces. I mean, these are people who have no feelings, but I don't know. There was an announcement earlier in the day, or maybe it was just a news story, that they were going to release the autopsy results this afternoon. I haven't seen anything about that. Have you?
No, in fact, that was one of the reasons I was asking you if you had any information, because you're right, I heard the same thing, that they were going to release it, and here we are, you know, 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and maybe it's going to be a midnight release, Bill, you know, kind of an
well,
early morning.
Like a document dump,
yeah,
know,
right,
a Friday
exactly.
document.
Maybe it's going to be at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, when 90% of the country is sleeping.
Now, I want to know if he's going to get a state funeral.
Yeah, that would be good. I'm also interested in knowing, Bill, and I hope you you tell us if this happens over at Urgent Agenda. I'm anxious to see if Beto O'Rourke is going to take a trip to New York to blame it on President Trump. He's blaming everything else on President Trump, so I'm kind of anxious if Beto is headed your way.
Well, I'll tell you, he has behaved so irresponsibly.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he's behaved like a little boy. And they still take him seriously. CNN had him on as a guest of one of his major political shows today, and I don't know why. You know, I think back to 1960, the iconic election of 1960 between Jack Kennedy and Richard Nixon. And while Nixon was guaranteed the Republican nomination, the Democratic nomination was very much contested. And any one of the candidates running for the Democratic nomination that year could have stepped into the American presidency the next day, and very easily. They were all that qualified. And look at this group in the Democratic Party. And they have on TV for long interviews Beto O'Rourke. this man is not qualified to run a student government, let alone
right.
a real government. And he makes these speeches, which he fills with the curse words and slander, and you know, the president is a racist, he's a this, and then he uses words that can't be used on television. What have we come to in our politics? Really, this is a very low moment.
You know, Bill, what I find fascinating about Beto O'Rourke and Cory Booker were basically saying the same thing this morning, and I find it interesting that they all go on CNN to do it. I don't see any of them. Let's say, I didn't see any of them on Fox News. I guess that's what I'm saying. They all go to the same place, and I don't know if that's by chance or by design. But I'm really disappointed that Jake Tapper, who's supposed to be a serious reporter, and I think he usually is, from what I understand. I don't watch him that much, but I've heard he's pretty good. I'm kind of surprised that he didn't say, you know, Beto, you're crazy. I'm going to shut this interview down right now, Beto, you're crazy. I'm kind of surprised he didn't do that, Phil.
Well, you know, almost everything is surprising. The behavior of people does not seem to follow any cultural pattern that we would respect. You know, Oprah Winfrey said, and I don't usually listen to Oprah Winfrey, but she said we seem to have lost a moral core. And I think we have. I think they have. There seem to be no rules. Don't you get that feeling that, or nobody feels any compulsion to
right.
follow any rules? And
right.
and it is it's a very sad time.
Yes, I agree. And in fact, they invited me over to Telemundo this morning to talk about this, and obviously the Democrat immediately started blaming President Trump for almost sounding a lot like Beto O'Rourke. And I said, well, I don't think we should play politics with this, I said, because how do you explain what happened in Dayton, Ohio? I mean,
that's
Trump
right.
had nothing to do with that. That was the other side of the political scale.
And then I said,
what about Chicago? I said, what about Chicago? You have the equivalent of a Dayton, Ohio every weekend in Chicago.
That's
Eight
right.
to ten people, just about
that's
every
right.
weekend, 290 or so this year. And nobody talks about that. I guess nobody wants to talk about how well those gun laws are working in Chicago, Bill.
That's right, and nobody wants to talk about the fact that virtually all the killings in Chicago are tragically black-on-black, which means more African-Americans are by far killed by other African-Americans than by white, and yet when these stories are reported, they're reported as racial issues. They're not racial
mm-hmm.
issues. This is a cultural tragedy. Excuse me.
Well, I mentioned
and,
also,
I just read, by the way, I went over to
yeah,
my computer.
Ahead.
The autopsy
sure.
was completed, and they say the cause of death is still pending.
Okay.
Now that's
well, then it wasn't
very,
really completed, I guess.
Well, it was because they do toxicology tests.
Oh, okay.
And that raises an interesting possibility. They also apparently do other tests, even if it appears to be one type of wound, that they do tests on the skin to make absolutely certain. So we'll get the results, but the results were apparently not obvious. Now that,
right.
that's
well,
interesting.
It's like going to the airport and hearing that your relative's plane has landed. We just don't know where it is.
That's right. that's right. And but that's interesting. If they have not given any more details. If they do a toxicology test and find out that he was poisoned, that would shake things up.
That would be the old expression, something hit the fan. If that's the case.
Yes, yes.
I mean, because then you're going to have all kinds of conspiracy theories. Well, they'll get to the bottom of one way or the other because if he was poisoned, somebody had to deliver the food. I mean, they can trace it back to somebody, but
yes.
man, that I'm almost hoping
unless
they
someone,
tell us
unless
he died of a heart attack.
Yes, well, you know, and also, I mean, if he died of poisoning, it could have also been that he asked somebody to slip the poison to him, if it was a real
yeah,
suicide.
I mean, that's right, and it's all kinds of possibilities, so that's why I'm kind of hoping that they tell us that he died of a heart attack. Otherwise, I'm not sure we need that. We need that story right now that he was poisoned. I'm not sure the country needs that right now. I think we have so many other things going on that's one we don't need, Bill.
Well, it is, that's right, because I know the Attorney General has expressed his dismay at the fact that the fact that this man was able to be killed or die with all the precautions that presumably had been surrounding him. Now we learn from other news reports that the prison was very lax, as I said before, that standards were not maintained. Now I see on a headline saying that prison guards are working heavily overtime. They may have been stressed. But we'll just have to wait for more information. But what people want to know, of course, is if in fact it was poison, was it murder? And who, obviously, that will be the main question, and for what purpose? The fact is that Epstein has a long record here. There were a lot of documents involved with his cases, but I'm sure he kept many things to himself. You know, which is a great way of staying alive, by the way. You know, it's I think that the suspicion, the general suspicion is that if he was done away with, that he had a lot to say and that he was probably going to say it.
It probably did not help that President Trump retweeted something about the Clintons. I think he probably did it just to stick it to the Clintons.
That's right.
I'm beginning to feel that there's not a lot of love between those two people anymore.
No.
There may have been at one time when they were taking his money, but not anymore.
No, but it was a mistake for him to do it. And once again, we have a situation where the president hurts himself. And if he loses the election next year, that might be what loses it for him. If he loses control of himself, he just cannot seem to help injecting himself into these situations in an inappropriate way.
Yes, I mean, there are times when you're better off just watching from the bleachers and letting the other side destroy itself or letting the events just unfold. He doesn't have to have an opinion about everything or be a part of everything. And I think you're right. I think it hurts him. And I was disappointed that he did that. Now, of course, Beto O'Rourke is angry about that too, Bill.
Well, he's angry about everything. And I don't think I've ever seen a candidate who was more immature. I mean, he comes off like a little boy. And you know, we went through a period in this country's history where a young Jack Kennedy was really challenged on whether he was old enough and mature enough to run for president. He was 43, I think. O'Rourke
43.
Is 40. And are we going to go through this
O'Rourke
again?
O'Rourke is actually 47. I don't know if you knew that, but he's actually 47 years old. But
who, O'Rourke?
Yeah, O'Rourke is 47, Yeah.
Well, he's older than Jack Kennedy.
He is,
But he seems much younger.
Oh, I agree. Well, I think that was part of his act, to look like a 32-year-old or a 25-year-old. That's how he went into all those universities and had kids thinking that he was a rock star rather than a candidate for the U.S. Senate. So, I mean, that was all part of his act. But I guess we're just going to have to find out maybe tomorrow morning what – the autopsy really was. I just hope for the sake of the country that he died from a natural death, maybe a heart attack or whatever. I just don't think that New York needs right now a scandal like that, Bill.
Well, you know, you're right, but you know what happens if they make an announcement that he died a natural death? The conspiracy theories will just start all up again and say, well, the coroner is involved in it.
That's right. Yeah, there's going to be conspiracy theories no matter what happens, but maybe we'll get to it. Maybe we'll get to it eventually. Bill, before we take a look at some of the news this week, I saw something in the history website today that on this day in 1972, the last American combat troop left Vietnam, meaning that there were no more American soldiers engaged in combat. The South Vietnamese were now doing all of the combats, which meant that for the next 4 months of the election, President Nixon was saying that he had ended the war and Senator McGovern was running against the war, but we didn't have a war going on.
Yes.
And I bring this up because back then, what happened was that the Democrats were out of touch with reality. I mean, how do you nominate an anti-war candidate when the war is over? I mean, that's pretty stupid. And I'm beginning to think the same thing about 2019 and 2020, that the people running the party are so out of touch with reality that they're just going to write a platform and nominate a candidate who's going to have to say a lot of things that just don't make any sense, Bill, or don't connect with voters, Bill.
I think that's true. And, you know, the big questions being asked now, one of the big questions being asked is, who will control the Democratic convention? You know, they can talk all they want to about, most Democrats are moderates and they're not part of this crazy faction. It really depends on who gets elected as a delegate. And we saw from the last convention of the Democratic Party, when Obama was presumably in charge of the convention, that it went way out of control in some places. Clearly the left wing of the party was in charge. They were not very effective in 2016 in getting too many things across and adopted. But I think next year, especially if there's a big Elizabeth Warren contingent, that the convention can go completely out of control, as it did, you mentioned 1972, as it did in 1972, when they said the smell of marijuana was in the hall, and they wouldn't even allow their presidential candidate, George McGovern, to accept his nomination in prime time. He had to wait till 2 o'clock in the morning when the whole country was asleep, because every little ethnic group had to have a speaker who spoke, so that they could acknowledge the important contributions of these people to society and allow, you know, the individual to get some fame back home. But it destroyed the whole image of a victorious convention. And then, of course, McGovern went on to lose 49 states.
Right. And that's probably not going to happen this time. In other words, I cannot see, Trump winning 49 states. But, you know, it could get interesting, especially if there's a third-party candidate, someone who actually, you know, you get to the convention and the left is not happy and Bernie Sanders decides that, you know, he's not going to spend his last election sitting at home watching Joe Biden debate President Trump. But he goes off on his own. Tom Steyer goes off on his own. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities. None of them are going to be good for the Democrats, though.
No, and you know, we talked about this off the air. You could accept some antics in the party when the field running for president is strong. If the antics are coming from people who clearly are outside the mainstream of the party. But you look at the Democratic Party today, there is not one candidate running who I would have confidence in if that candidate was in the Oval Office. I mean, not one. There is they dragged Biden back in because they thought, well, as a former vice president, he'd be acceptable to most people, and indeed he is, leading in the polls. But I mean, my goodness, it's a gaffe a minute. No real policies. Nobody even knows what his policies are going to be. And as far as the other candidates, they seem more to be in show business than in politics.
Yes, and there's even a story that I saw, maybe on Urgent Agenda, there's a story that I saw that there's a certain fatigue with these Democrats in Iowa, that the people in Iowa, and they're supposed to be the first, you know, the first state that do their caucus, but people are starting to feel frustrated because it's like, it's too early and these Democrats are not really saying anything new. They're basically pandering to the left of the party. I mean, and I read that there's a little fatigue, you know, that people are just getting tired of this so early. That could also have an impact on turnout, Bill.
I think it can, and they, if they think it's too early, they're right. I mean, it is August of the year before a presidential election. We have a year to go just to the conventions.
Right.
I mean, the world can change 20 times in that year, much too early. There will be, actually, primaries, like the New Hampshire primary, in about 5 months. Now, that was always held in the election year, so that's when you really generally begin a campaign. This campaign has already been going on 4 or 5 months, and I think you're right. People are tired. They, you know, they want an election. Maybe they should have an informal election, you know, election for president just to give us practice.
That's right. And now, of course, they have another debate coming up in September, but that's only going to be 7 now.
Yes.
So from 20 to 7, it'd be interesting to see who makes the cut, Bill.
Yeah. Yes. And there's going to be a lot of griping because I suspect the cut, you know, look, Biden will be there, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren.
Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris will probably be there, although that could be a surprise because she's not doing well in the polling at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the several appearances before national audiences didn't work. So there might be some strange stuff going on there. But and a few other candidates who clearly have a right to be there, but I think you're going to get a dropout from the fringe candidates, from Amy Klobuchar, who should have been taken more seriously, some of the others, and getting it down to seven, that may not be good for Biden because the other candidates had accumulated might not go to Biden that easily. I think the Democrats may surprise us. It may also be true that a dark horse will somehow announce and begin a campaign. We just don't know. But I don't sense excitement outside the Democratic Party in who their candidates are or this whole format that they've developed.
Yeah, well, I sense the exact opposite. I sense that a lot of people are really worried about what the party is doing to itself. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a quick plug here for my friend Carlos Geves. You know, we play his music, and we have a link to his website on our show information. He's playing all over Dallas. He's a lot of fun, and the food wherever he plays is just absolutely, absolutely excellent. Well, let's get back to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, I thought maybe in the next debate that Julian Castro would have his brother Joaquin sit in for him so that he can explain – why he dumped all these donors' names.
Well, yes, they could play the old game.
By the way,
you couldn't tell
the difference. They're identical twins. You couldn't tell the difference between them. If one showed up in the other one's place, you couldn't tell, Bill.
If one of them got elected, the other could be inaugurated.
That's right, exactly.
And they wouldn't
right.
know. You know, you made a point just before the break that that we should emphasize. We're in agreement on the idea that many people are worried about the Democratic Party. The problem is the party is not worried about itself. They keep on going on and on with this stuff as if nobody is objecting.
Mm-hmm.
It's otherworldly. They are living in another world.
Well, there was a lady that I saw today during one of the morning shows. I don't remember the lady's name, but it was in a panel, and she said that the more the Democrats talk about Trump being a racist, or white supremacists, or all these other crazy things that they're saying, the less they're talking about the issues that got them the majority in 2018. Nobody ran in 2018 saying, send me to Washington because Trump's a racist. Those are not the people who won elections. Those people have got to be very frustrated, Bill.
That's right. And, of course, Trump wasn't on the ticket in 2018. He will be next year. And people forget that he's a very, very effective vote getter. He really is. Now, that doesn't mean he will be next year. A lot depends on whether he can keep himself under control. But if the economy is strong and he can keep himself under control, which are two big ifs, I think the Democrats will have a very hard time defeating him, unless there is a major collapse of some kind somewhere.
Yeah, something unexpected. Yes, you're right.
Yes.
That would be against them. But to me, there's so many stories of the week, so let's go to one of the Castro brothers, and I don't mean the ones in Cuba, I mean the ones in San Antonio. they probably think a lot alike because their mother, I understand, and I say this with all due respect to their mom because I don't like to pick on moms, but apparently she was quite a lefty when she was coming up, quite a lefty activist when she was coming up. But Joaquin Castro, the member of Congress, not the one running, decided to release all these names. I thought that was such I thought that was so bad. I mean, I just couldn't believe it, Bill. I know these names are public technically, but there's always been an understanding that you don't make them public. They're public in the sense that the, whatever organization has their name, but
yes,
they don't make them public, Bill.
Well, that's the point. There was that courtesy in politics. There are often many courtesies in politics that have just gone by the wayside. I mean, the behavior of candidates toward each other, the calling of names that don't seem to have anything to do with the person who is being called. There's no courtesy left. There's no real patriotism left. And I think you're right when you say the American people are completely discouraged.
Yes, I think so. I think there's a sense out there that this is not a way to elect a president. There's got to be. A better way. I think Al Gore is calling you, Bill.
That's my cell phone going off.
Yeah, I think
I don't
he
know.
Wants
maybe
to tell
maybe
you that,
it's maybe it's the ghost of Jeffrey Epstein. Let's see.
Well,
I'll look
be,
at my cell phone.
Know,
oh,
yeah,
it's,
check
it's
and
spam.
See if it's coming from that part of the city where the prison is. It could be somebody giving you a tip on what we're going to hear tonight. But I just think. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think this whole thing with Joaquin Castro was such in bad taste. And
yes,
a lot of the people whose names were released, there's a retired homemaker whose name was released, a couple of business people, the owner of a very popular restaurant here. And one of the people whose name was released was also a very big businessman in San Diego who employs thousands of Hispanics, and they're apparently pretty happy with their employment, Bill.
Yes, yes. Well, I can't imagine the public being impressed by this. However,
no, we
should say, much to our discouragement, it could be effective in driving down Trump's contributions. It could be. I mean,
yeah,
there are people already saying publicly, you know, prominent business people, I don't know if I can contribute again. I really don't like this publicity. So in their own way, they could have done something masterful, but I think it lowers the whole level of the political process.
Well, Trump should release the names of all the Democrats he gave money to, Bill.
Yes.
And
yes,
maybe publish the letters that he got from them telling him what a great American he was.
That would be wonderful. And I'm sure among those letters is one from Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely. And then maybe one from the Clinton Foundation,
yes,
acknowledging his contribution, and Planned Parenthood, I'm sure, was there as well, and John Kerry. And maybe he even gave money to Joe Biden. I wouldn't be surprised.
That would be, you know, that would be the kind of thing he would do. He gave a lot of money over the years to Democrats. He also, by the way, gave a lot of time and money to minorities. The
mm-hmm.
former borough president of Queens was quoted this week in a column in which he said, "I've known Trump for years. He's not a racist. He was always there to help minorities when they needed him. I wish there would be more people who would come forward and say that, but it doesn't seem to affect the news reporting. They go on and say whatever they please, whether it's true or not."
Right. Well, I remember the afternoon, Bill, of the shooting in El Paso. And I was in the car. We were in the car. We were going out to dinner, and we had to make a stop at a shopping center, so we stopped there. And I was in the car listening to the news. And within 5 minutes, you had Democrats blaming it on Trump. Even before we knew anything about this young man, and we're now finding out a lot of things about him, that he was motivated to kill by a lot more than just immigration. There were lots of other crazy things on that manifesto, assuming he wrote it, which is another question. But it just seemed like so quickly they were blaming President Trump, and without any hesitation whatsoever. You know, President Trump has a right to be angry about that, Bill.
He does. And what is amazing is, once again, you see something that in politics sometimes does work but often backfires, and that is they're underestimating the intelligence of the American people. The American people aren't stupid. Now, they're not all geniuses, but the fact is that the public is often much better informed than politicians think. You know, I think I probably told the story on the show before. I once had the chance of interviewing Charles Gerold, who did the On the Road series for CBS, and I asked him what was the most important thing that he learned in going around, driving around the United States for so many years for the network. And without any hesitation, he said, "I'm always impressed by how well-informed Americans are. They are. They know more than politicians mm-hmm. in Washington and journalists think they know, and they know right. how to use the information." And I think that there must be a sense of revulsion out there at some of these hijinks that we've talked about tonight. And I think that that sense of revulsion will probably grow again unless Trump does something to hurt himself.
Right. No, and I've also heard many people say that they don't even, you know, when they hear the word racist or they hear the accusation that Trump is a racist, that it goes in one ear and out the other. Because it doesn't mean anything anymore. At one
That's
time,
right.
being called a racist, you know, was perhaps career-threatening. But now it just means you disagree with a Democrat. So it doesn't seem to have – which is, as I understand, that's the reason they're now using the word white supremacist. Because
yes.
the racist word, I mean, that pitch doesn't break anymore, to use a baseball analogy. So now the white supremacist has now become the old racist bill.
That's exactly right. And what is particularly offensive about that is the term white supremacy has always been associated with the segregationist South. And the idea that it can be applied to any situation today is complete hogwash. I mean, the times really have changed racially in America, and they have changed for the better. And to call Trump a white supremacist based entirely on his stand on immigration, which is not a racial stand, but a stand about illegal immigration, is awful. The Democratic Party should feel shame, but they don't.
Yeah. Well, they think this is working, which leads me to another question, Bill, or another issue. Maybe they're doing this because they don't think their people are going to turn out. Maybe they're trying to excite their base to turn out by scaring them like this, Bill.
Well, I think that's true because, you know, this is an old technique, the shaming technique, shaming one group by calling them racist to the point where they don't want to participate anymore because they can't stand the embarrassment, even
mm-hmm.
though the charge is not true. That's one thing. And the other thing is to scare people to go to the polls. You know, there was a column written this week, I don't recall who wrote it, I think it was an American thinker, though, pointing out the fact that because of the 1964 Voting Rights Act, the Democratic Party had to hustle to run in national elections because they were losing what used to be called the Solid South. And the Democrats, some of the leaders, resorted to the idea of scaring people, minorities, to go to the polls to drive up their numbers, which were being diminished by the loss of the South. Now, you know, that is a terrible thing to do. It's unethical. It violates the basic standards of politics. But the reality is, it works. It works. People can be scared into voting. And I think it's a terrible thing to do. It can also lead to violence, but it may work.
Well, it may very well work, but they're being so hysterical about it that, you know, my skeptical nature leads me to think that maybe they're worried that they're not going to get a turnout. Maybe they're worried that Trump is scoring better with African Americans and Hispanics than they think he should be. I mean, it's not like
yes.
President Trump needs 30% of the African American vote. If he takes it from 10 to 20, that would be significant. And the Hispanic vote, he starts with 30. If he can take it up to 35, 36, that could make a big difference, Bill.
It could make a tremendous difference. It probably will be a close election. And I think that is their intent. I think they really are going to campaign very heavily in both black and Hispanic areas, and maybe with some success. And the Democrats, of course, are going to go all out in those areas. And that's where the scare campaign can be. Biden himself, once in one of his elections, told black voters that if the Democrat was elected, they would be sent back into slavery. He actually said that in an election campaign. So you're quite right.
That's
about
right.
Where the instinct lies.
Yes, absolutely. Well, of course, the gun control debate continues now, and now we're into more background checks. And my own, you know, my sense, Bill, is that I like background checks. I hope we do them. and I like to expand them as much as it is practical to do so. I would go a step further. I would say if you come in for a background check and let's say you pass 100%, that maybe there ought to be a second opinion. Maybe go to the FBI or whatever, just to get a second opinion to make sure that there was no mistake. So I have no problem with any of that. But these people are not satisfied. They just want to take away your guns, Bill.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, I think that the president is ironically handling this very, very well. He is saying we have discussions. They are for expanded background checks. He said today that, or maybe it was yesterday, that he feels he can get the NRA on board. And if he does that, that will be a great figure in his cap.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he probably could. I think if the call for background checks finds its way into legislation, that the legislation will probably be very responsible, and the NRA will feel compelled to support it because their own political position could erode. So I think that comment he made had a very, very definite purpose, and that was to assure the public that the NRA will start acting responsibly in areas where it hasn't, and to assure them that all this effort will pay off.
But then there's also the question of how this hurts the Democrats, because gun control has always been a different issue in the city, you know, for city Democrats and for rural Democrats. And many of these Democrats elected in 2018 came from districts where, you know, gun control was not that big of an issue, Bill.
That's right, and not very popular.
Right.
The point you make is a very good one. The Democratic Party is in control of the House because of moderates winning, not because of AOC or her whole contingent from the Bronx. They don't really have that many votes. They have a lot. They have a lot of vocal cords, but not votes. So, you know, all these issues tend to be magnified for the press for maximum audience appeal. So what we've been getting is all the attention on vicious fights, on the pretty girl from the Bronx. They're really running it more like a Hollywood movie than an actual election campaign.
Yeah. Do you think that it's possible that AOC has more Twitter followers and she got votes on Election Day?
It's hard to say. I really, you know, this is a big story in New York politics. There are people who feel that she's now become a fixture. But on the other hand, there are people who feel that internally within her district, she's running into trouble because she really doesn't represent the district. I mean, she does not perform the kind of constituent services that you would think she would, as for somebody who feels everybody's pain and then three times over.
Right.
And that there was just last week an election held in the election was held earlier, but the recount was finished in Queens, which is one of the five counties of New York City. And the progressives, led by AOC, were embracing a radical candidate for district attorney, among whose stands were to bring more prostitution to Queens. I kid you not, that was a serious stand, because Queens is yearning for more hookers on every lawn. I mean, they really are. You see them out yearning for it. And they thought, the progressives thought, that she was going to win the recount, but she didn't. She lost. So AOC's candidate went down to defeat in a district right next to AOC. And, of course, the papers didn't make any mention of it. They wouldn't, because, they're all in for her. And it was apparently a very jolting victory. She suddenly understood you have to keep up your contact with your stars.
Yeah, you almost get the feeling that she ran she represents a district at large in the sense that she doesn't really represent any particular district, because you're right. A congressman or a congresswoman is really focused on the district, you know, with constituent service and,
yes,
you know, and especially in New York, where she can be there, you know, in an hour, a couple of hours flight. I mean, she could even drive there. So
yes,
she could be in New York and Washington. It's not like
she
wouldn't fly to California.
She wouldn't ride in a car. She would take a sailboat.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe she'll take one from the Potomac all the way to through the ocean there and end up
that's
in New
right.
York. But I mean, my point is that she's not that far. She could almost be, you know, she could spend half of her week and her office in New York doing constituent service. But what I understand, there's this lady who's running against her, also an immigrant from Jamaica,
yes.
who's running against her. I saw her on TV. She seems pretty sharp. And that's
yes,
the
she
charge.
Does.
You know, she's basically saying nobody sees this lady anymore. I mean, where is this lady? We see her on MSNBC. We see her here. We see her there. But nobody in this district has seen her since she was elected, Bill.
That's exactly right. And there are many stories throughout American political history of candidates who become nationally famous and then lose their election at home because
mm-hmm.
they have lost contact with their district and begin to ignore it. The most famous case being Eric Cantor, the Republican leader of the House, who
mm-hmm.
was defeated for re-election while still the Republican leader. So the Republicans had a leader in the House who couldn't hold his own district. And there are cases, well, the famous one also, of Charles Percy, the Republican senator from Illinois,
mm-hmm.
who became chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, very prestigious post, but one of the most dangerous in American politics. Because if your senator becomes chairman of foreign relations, people say, well, he's not interested in us anymore. He's
mm-hmm.
just going to go out and become a citizen of the world. It's exactly what happened, and Percy was defeated for re-election. So,
right.
you know, you got to not just and also let's remember, before I forget, that the turnout in the primary that AOC won was only 18%. She won in part because of a very, very low turnout, even for a local election. The turnout next year is going to be much larger, and a lot of people, angry people can go to the polls wondering what she's ever done for them.
Well, there's also going to be, at least on, it appears that there's going to be a Republican who actually wants to win that district, too. This lady that I saw on TV, the lady Jamaican immigrant, she looks like she'd be a tough candidate and appears willing to spend the time and money to get the vote, something that I'm sure the Republican didn't do the last time around, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, many elections are winnable, even in districts in which the opposition holds great advantages. They're winnable depending on the enthusiasm and work of the candidate running. Rudy Giuliani was elected mayor in an overwhelmingly Democratic city because he
was
willing to really run hard. Some of them are not. Sometimes they just put up a token candidate. The Republican Party in New York is very weak. It seems to belong to whoever gets nominated for governor and then is handed over to somebody else. But if a Republican candidate, especially one who has something of a name, like Giuliani did, gets up and really runs, that candidate can win. He beat David Dinkins for the mayoralty.
That's right. Bill, as we look at next week, one of the most frustrating things for me is watching how foreign policy is completely off the front page. The Democrats are not talking about it in their primary. It's almost as if they don't even know there's foreign policy when you become president. And, of course, President Trump has to deal with it on a day-to-day basis. What are some of the foreign policy stories that you'll be keeping an eye on here this summer or the rest of the summer? Because you got China, you got North Korea, always have Russia, you got Venezuela. There's a lot of stuff out there that nobody's talking about, Bill.
And very dangerous stuff. That's
yes.
that's the point. Very dangerous stuff. Iran, clearly. I mean, we
yes.
have not been able to solve the problem of the nuclear deal, which has fallen apart, basically. The president correctly saying it's a terrible deal to begin with. You have that. You also have these new tensions with Russia, which are gaining some attention finally. And that is because one of the treaties with Russia fell apart. We withdrew from it, and we withdrew because they weren't honoring it. And apparently what you're seeing now is very unexpected tension with Russia. A third thing that is going to play out and is going to have some effect is the fact that our allies in Europe are treating us terribly, especially Germany. They have become very aloof on our Iran policy because they just want the money. They seem terribly offended that we've been asking them to pay their fair share. And they are openly defying us on Iran, not all, but most. And I think this is a story that's going to play out and falls right into Trump's nationalist agenda. When Trump goes to the American people and says, do you want to be treated well by the allies? They're going to say yes. They're not going to say no. And it'll be another issue for him. But the behavior of Europe toward America, I'm beginning to see columns written by Europeans in American newspapers critical of President Trump. That could become a major campaign issue.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, the way I look at it, I know you follow foreign policy quite a bit on Urgent Agenda, but, it, you know, none of the Democrats seem to be talking about it. It's like they don't even know it exists. Now, they're going to have to deal with it eventually once we get to the general election. But it's almost as if the primary in the Democrat Party is all about issues that are completely irrelevant in a general election. There's no talk of it. For example, Israel, there's no talk of that. There's no talk of Iran. It just seems – it's almost like you're watching an election for student councilville.
Exactly. You're watching a local election, that's what's happened. And it's an election based not on what the American people are demanding, but these little interest groups within the Democratic Party are demanding. I mean, the endless emphasis on race. I think Americans look around and they really do not believe that race relations have deteriorated. In fact, some polls among African Americans said that. They're actually pretty good. But that's an issue that these people depend on and run on, the progressives, and they're going to bring it up and force it down our throats whether we want to or not. You're absolutely right. There is this tremendous disconnect. You look at the Democratic Party and you say that's not an American political party, and maybe the people will come to that conclusion.
Well, it looks to me more like they're running for president of San Francisco.
Yes.
Than for president of the United States. I mean, it's just remarkable the issues that they focus on. You know, they had this debate a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, they talk about immigration in a way that I don't think most people understand. I mean, look, I don't support deporting 11 million people. It's not practical. I would rather deal with it differently than that. But, you know, I think it was Bill Maher who said, of HBO, who said that if the Democrats are more worried about somebody in the caravan coming from Central America than the guy in the Midwest who's working at a factory, well, if they're more worried about that person in the caravan, they're going to lose the election.
Of course. And they are more worried about that guy in the caravan. I mean, you do wonder when you hear the Democratic Party candidates speak, as you pointed out, who are they appealing to? Who do they think they're appealing to? You made a very good point that some of this may work in a primary, but all these things are being taped, and they're going to play back some of these tapes during the election. You can just see President Trump standing next to a monitor and saying, "Can you believe this? Can you believe this woman? She wants to be your president, this Elizabeth Warren. My goodness, listen to what she has to say." And they're going to hang them with their own words.
That's right. Now, you mentioned one thing before we go. I wanted to ask you about Kamala Harris, who seems to have kind of gone off the tracks a little bit. You know, she was, and again, it's early. She could turn it around. I'm not saying that it's over. But at one time, she was like going to be the Obama of 2020.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, she was going to be the female Obama, the female version of Obama. And she is very telegenic. She is eloquent and all of that. But she's not clicking. She's simply not clicking with people. I mean, people look at her. There's something about her that just doesn't. Now, I have a theory, and this is, may sound terrible, but I have a theory. I don't think a lot of African Americans actually see her as an African American. And maybe that's her problem.
I think that's true. She doesn't have the genuineness that, like, Cory Booker has.
Yes.
But he's not doing that well either. But also, I think she's thrown it in people's faces too much. She says, "Oh, I'm a woman of color. I'm this. I'm that. I'm practically African. I always wanted to marry Sidney Poitier. And she lays it on so thick." And then what they actually see is a woman who, yes, has darker skin than most of us, but clearly does not have culturally that background. I mean, she really doesn't. She's as American as apple pie.
Right. No, it's just that she just simply does not come across as somebody who is that, like you say, genuine. There's something about her. Now, President Obama didn't, to a lot of us, come across that way either. But he was the first one, and I think he was, since he was not running against a re-election of a president, he was running in an open seat. that gave him an advantage. He also had the advantage of that banking crisis. But I don't see, you know, Kamala Harris campaigning as well as President Obama did. I just don't see her doing that well, Bill.
No, and the fact is that if she is at her best, she can be an effective debater and an effective spokeswoman, but she's rarely at her best. And I think what she is missing is that she has to break out from the group in a different way. She has got to run as if she's already president, and
mm-hmm.
and give herself some stature. There's a stature gap there. She's intelligent. She's got an interesting background. She does not come off as crazy as some of the others. She has a lower level of craziness. But the fact of the matter is, she does not seem to carry herself with the kind of style people would want in a female president.
Right, and just too much pandering too. That's what I would say. If she were to come
out
and say, you know, if she were to come out and say, yes, I put all those people in prison in California because that was my job. I was the attorney general.
That's exactly right, and she would get great support.
Absolutely. I mean, and instead of, you know, just pandering and having to apologize because you enforce the law. Well, that may work in certain places, but I don't think that works in a general election. I think one of the most effective tools that President Trump has on the topic of immigration is that he can say, I'm enforcing the law. I'm enforcing the borders.
That's right.
And I think that is a very effective tool with most people, Bill.
I think so. And also, he can say, we'd like to do more for these people as people, but the Democrats are blocking the legislation. Just turn
That's
it around.
Right. That's exactly right. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time. And next week, why don't you put on your Brooklyn Dodgers hat on?
I will.
I think you can do it. Nobody can see you.
Well, you know, it's August, which is, as I've said, it's the dullest month of the year. Even when things are happening, which they are, they don't seem to be happening as dramatically as they do the rest of the year. And I think maybe for the rest of the month, we should act as if we're psychiatrists on vacation. We're not available.
That's right. Well, have a wonderful day, Bill. And as always, thank you for your time and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you. Looking forward to next Sunday.
All right. Thank you so much. Our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We always get together on Sundays and have these wonderful chats. I hope you're enjoying them. I know you're enjoying them because a lot of you tell me so. Well, it's 90-something here in Dallas, Texas, on a late Sunday night, and it's supposed to be in the 90s and in the 100s for the rest of the week. So wherever you are, I hope you have a swimming pool nearby or somewhere to go to cool off. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.